Pastor Mai, hello and welcome to this episode of Agenda. I'm Ewan Gorn. As Manx life continues to change day by day, we reflect on a week of decisions designed to keep people safe and the economy afloat during the pandemic. £100 million in economic support is approved by Tynwald as the food retail industry pleads for calm and respect for its workers. Local authorities face an uncertain financial future with reserves likely to be wiped out by the consequences of the pandemic. And despite what you may think, one of the island's largest broadband providers insists its network hasn't reached capacity yet. Before we start the programme, just a reminder of some of the latest developments. The island, of course, went into lockdown last week with no arrivals now permitted. The only exception to that rule will be, of course, for emergency medical treatment and for key workers critical to infrastructure. Freight services will continue as normal. An island-wide speed limit was imposed recently of 40 miles per hour. Non-essential shops are now closed apart from some key suppliers such as supermarkets, pharmacies, pet shops, petrol stations and banks. And of course, as of 10 on the 30th of March this morning, at the time of recording in the island, there have been 46 confirmed cases of the virus, two of which of the people infected there are in hospital. That's 774 concluded cases, with a further 179 results being awaited and 178 tests waiting for those to come back. Well, last Friday, the Treasury Minister has warned that the island's domestic economy is in danger of collapsing under the burden of the coronavirus pandemic. Alfred Cannon's comments came as Tynwald approved more than £100 million worth of financial support to businesses and taxpayers through the pandemic. The sum will be taken from the £850 million National Insurance Fund and is expected to last 12 weeks, after which further cash will be required. In Tynwald, Mr. Cannon gave the following message.
The problem we are facing is clear. As a direct result of coronavirus, the effect that it is having on global health and the actions being taken by both governments worldwide and the government on the island, this has meant, quite simply, that our domestic economy is in danger of collapsing. Our objective is clear. We must support people and business by providing for cash flow support, either directly or indirectly, for the short term. Our strategy is combined with the health strategy, which is to suppress the virus in the shortest possible time frame. If the actions we are taking to protect health are successful, then our chances of economic recovery are improved significantly. In other words, the longer this crisis goes on, the longer, the greater, and the deeper the financial impact. We are geared up, therefore, to support this nation as much as we can do to see us through the next 12 weeks. If we can suppress the virus in the next 21 days, we can potentially start to get the nation back to work in the days and weeks following in a controlled manner. So we need to support as much as we can the urgent needs of our people and economy as quickly and effectively as possible. Honourable members will know by now that these measures do not stand in isolation. A full package of measures has been brought forward to help those most affected by this crisis to try and find solutions they need to help them through the next 3 months. I must, of course, repeat to you that I do not expect every business to survive or every job to be saved. But we can and we will recover from this. I will report back to Tynwald in June with details of how much has been expended on these schemes, if indeed approved today. And on that note, Mr. President, I want to be clear that the wording in the motion is as such to allow us to overspend if we need. It is not a blank check, and clearly I'm happy to provide any such updates to honourable members as and when required.
The Treasury Minister, Alfred Cannon. Well, one of the industries on the front line, of course, is the food retail industry. Joining the Chief Minister at the coronavirus media briefing last Friday was Andrew Corrie. He's the area manager for the Manx Cooperative Society. Well, in a time of enormous stress for those in the food retail industry, he delivered this message for his colleagues.
Trust me when I say that these colleagues are like my family to me, and their safety is my number one priority. I will look after them, as will other business leaders on the Isle of Man. All food suppliers are now working together to keep the island fed, also with government. There is plenty of food and the supply chain is solid. I would also like to take this opportunity to give a big shout out to the Manx businesses such as Ramsey Bakery, Isle of Man Creameries, Isle of Man Meats, who are doing a sterling job in keeping the supply lines going of their products. At the moment, fresh foods are being prioritised and ambient supplies will see recovery over the next week or so. And you will slowly see item restrictions being removed in stores as the situation improves. I have some simple messages for the Manx people. There is no need to panic buy. Buy only what you need. Respect store colleagues, as the Chief Minister has said, and they will do the same for you. Also, respect the social distancing measures we've put in place. They are there for your protection and the protection of our colleagues. Shop for your elderly and vulnerable neighbours so they don't have to. Don't forget to keep using small Manx businesses as well, so they are still there for you when this is over. This includes shops as well as cafe and restaurant delivery and collection services. Finally, please all think of what you can do to help. Don't stand on the sidelines and volunteer to help wherever you can. Thank you very much, everyone.
Area Manager for the Manx Cooperative Society, Andrew Curry. If you need to go to A&E, you'll be heading to a different part of Nobles Hospital. The emergency department has been using the fracture clinic to handle patients presenting with coronavirus symptoms. However, COVID-19 patients will be asked to report to A&E, with the fracture clinic taking on those with all other issues. Clinical lead to the emergency department, Dr. Tim Karush, explained more about this to Sean Cowper.
For the last week or so, we've been running what was the fracture clinic as the patient area for people who might have the COVID-19. The idea of that is that we keep that patient group completely separate from the, you know, the general ED type patients that come here with all the other things that people come here with. And tomorrow we're going to switch that around so that the fracture clinic becomes the area for the general emergency department, and the emergency department will be for the COVID-19 type patients.
Why are you making this change now? Has there been perhaps a big increase in people coming in with suspected symptoms?
Well, there's been a steady increase since we opened, and that's what we would expect. And, you know, it's just the course of an epidemic. We knew we'd have to switch over, and we want to always be ahead of the curve here. So we're doing it not because we're overcrowded in the fracture clinic, but we're doing it before we do get overcrowded.
So if somebody needs to come up to the emergency department not related to coronavirus, what would be the advice for them?
It's really important that during the coronavirus illness period, that people feel confident they can still use the emergency department for the genuine emergencies that we're here. We've set up the minor injuries unit in Ramsey. It should be dealing with all the minor injuries so we can keep pressure off the ED here at Nobles. But for the usual sort of medical and surgical and trauma emergencies that we'd expect to see, then it's a really important part of our operational plan that it's business as usual and those people still get the same standard of care that they get at any other time.
Dr. Tim Karush there. Well, the coronavirus restrictions mean, of course, we're all spending more time at home, socially distancing, self-isolating, or working remotely. While keeping your distance, you've probably found yourself spending more time online or on the phone, which could mean you'd be facing a big bill. But one of the island's telecoms providers has taken action to cut costs and make sure everyone stays connected during this time. Manx Telecom is bringing a 50% cut to call charges for pay-as-you-go customers and releasing broadband caps at no additional charge. Manx Telecom CEO Gary Lamb explained more to Sean Cowper.
At the moment is obviously very difficult, and it's very important as we're all isolated in our homes that we allow people to continue to talk and be engaged and contactable. For obvious reasons, if there are any issues, it's quite a challenging time when you're isolated in your home. So we want to make sure that people can still talk and people know that they've always got the phone and it's always going to be working and they're always going to be able to get in touch with someone.
Are these measures going to be automatically applied to everyone, or do you have to apply?
They're going to apply to all of the tariffs that we've actually put the temporary measures on. We have no intention of disconnecting anybody. Anyone who's got any financial hardship, they should call us. and we will work with them to see what we can do. So it's very important that we do keep everybody connected. And then the range of changes in tariffs, just again to help people feel comfortable they can keep using their devices without it costing them a fortune.
Now, these changes are coming in from the 5th of April. Why not straight away?
Yeah, there's a few technical things that we have to do to be able to introduce these. What we have said is that we'll introduce them on the 5th, but if we can get them in sooner, we will. But we do have to get these technical changes made to be able to introduce them.
We spoke last week about Max Telecom's preparations coming up to coronavirus and more people working from home. And you were very open. You said you don't know how Max Telecom's infrastructure will cope. How has it been going?
First of all, we monitor the network on a regular basis. We have calls every day to discuss matters around coronavirus. What we're seeing at the moment is that the network is holding up okay. We're seeing a lot more usage during the day, but that usage is still not near the peaks that we'd see later in the day in a regular week. So at the moment, we're not seeing a massive issue on the network. There's no doubt going to be some spots on the island where it's going to be a little bit more challenging. And what we'd encourage people to do is let us know if you are experiencing difficulties. And wherever we can do something, we will try our best to try and improve that service if we can do that.
The CEO of Manx Telecom, Gary Lamb. You're listening to Agenda on Manx Radio. Next week, rates bills will go out for many local authorities to levy the amount they need for local services. Some have called, though, for a freeze on these local taxes, or at least a holiday. But for many authorities, not getting the required amount in would have a dramatic impact on the services they provide. The pandemic itself is having untold consequences on budgets in a number of ways. The leader of Douglas Council, David Christian, joined me for Agenda to explain how the pandemic is affecting the council's finances.
I think it will look very different. I've got to be honest, we are looking now at any schemes that were in the pipeline coming forward, which were rate-borne, and there will be schemes now that will disappear, that simply won't go ahead. Mm. Obviously, we do have commitments, wage increases and things like that that were agreed for a three-year period. There's no getting out of. It'd be unlawful for us to do so. So there are commitments we've got to make, but any schemes in the pipeline we will be looking at now, and we will be pulling back on those so that it is only the essential that goes forward. I think the whole Alaman's going to be completely different when this is over. I hope some good will come out of it, because I think as a community, it's clearly evident the way people are pulling together, wanting support, hopefully doing it in a very safe manner. You know, but I've had different people who have contacted me offering different levels of support in all different ways. So that's evident about the island. So hopefully we'll be a bit more of a caring community when this is all over. But financially, listening to the finance minister yesterday, Alf Cannon, I mean, quite clearly, they put a fantastic package there together to keep the island afloat, to try and sustain businesses. But it is all going to be very different. We're all going to have to look at things differently. Belts are going to have to be tightened. Mm. But I mean, the main message is we will come out of this. You know, it's unprecedented, you know, but we will get over the curve, as they're calling it, and we will come out of this, and hopefully we'll be stronger and better for it.
Well, I have to ask you, just off the Treasury Minister, and you mentioned him there, had been questioned by reporters yesterday about business rates, whether there'd be any relaxation of them or holidays just during the crisis. That's a significant source of income for all local authorities. What do you think about that? Is that being considered?
It is. Well, you'll recall a couple of months ago I did write to the Treasury Minister asking him to invoke some legislation which would allow the government to be looking at rate rebates at the time. This was for the promenade. And the Treasury Minister at the time just ruled that out and said, you know, he wasn't prepared to look at it. It was something for Douglas to deal with, and that the government were committing, you know, £20-odd million to the promenade, which we all accept and appreciate. So, of course, the rebates that were given in the promenade had to be met by all of Douglas ratepayers. I have written now to the Chief Minister today. It's a very considerable letter that I've sent to him. It is covering the area of businesses again, business rates, The licence fees that we pay to the DOI in relation to Chester Street and Drumgold Street car park. So I've covered a whole list of things in this letter to the Chief Minister, which I'm sure is going to be in a long list of issues they are dealing with. But on behalf of the ratepayers of Douglas, I had to flag these issues up and get them there and see what sort of a response we get back from
Could council afford to waive business rates for a period, or would that be a substantial financial loss?
We wouldn't be able to do it. We couldn't afford to do it. As I say, we have commercial tenants, and we are looking at assisting them in relation to rent over a three-month period. That is because some of our commercial tenants, they are community shops. They're on our housing estate. If they go, they'd be very hard to fill and get someone to come and fill those shops at a later date. They've already said they are finding it difficult. So we are already looking to assist there. But like I've said, our reserves are very limited. And we've used the reserves very sensibly in recent years. That's why rate demands over the last 10 or 12 years have either been inflation or below inflation or no increase at all, because we sensibly used reserves. We will continue to use reserves that we can at this present time without leaving the council in a dangerous position.
Can the council access any of the measures that were outlined by the Treasury Minister to help them through this time?
I'm not aware. Nothing's been brought to my attention at this time that there's anything there that we can actually access. And that's one of the reasons why I've now written to the Chief Minister raising a few issues. One, for example, it's out in the public domain. We pay over $1.1 million as a licence fee to run Chester Street and Drumgold Street car park for the DOI. This was part of the localisation when local authorities took on certain functions a number of years ago. Obviously, the numbers in the car parks have dropped in the last 12 months because of the promenade works, and now dropped drastically, obviously, as people are working from home. We did take the decision yesterday to make Chester Street free of charge. This was following a request to provide spaces for key workers who may be coming into the town to work, who don't normally have to pay, suddenly found they've got higher costs. I found that was going to be very hard to police, and that's when we made the decision, look, it'd be far easier to make the whole car park free of charge for anybody to use at this time, and that may spread through the other car parks. But of course, for us to sustain that, we will need a relaxation of the licence fee for that car park from the DOI, and that's one of the things that I'm asking the Chief Minister to consider.
It's all moved so quickly, and we had meant to speak last week about this, but the TT, of course, was a casualty of what's happened. The council, it does invest in the TT in a number of ways, or has income streams related to it. How much of an impact has that been on the council, the cancellation of the TT?
Yes, just from the bookings that we have and the taking over of Nobles Park and events like that, obviously, if other drama gone ahead in that, we are, in income-wise, down round about £90,000 to £100,000 of income that we've not got because of the TT. Obviously, our bigger concern, I think, on that is the actual hoteliers, the businesses, so many people, not just Douglas, but island-wide, that rely so much on that income coming in for the TT. But at the end of the day, it was absolutely 100% right, the decision that was made by government. And I know some people were saying, oh, leave it another month and all that. They made it at the right time, you know. No good leaving it another month when you know the inevitable is going to happen. And maybe some people would still be gearing up and maybe buying in things that then they would not be able to use or sell. So, absolute right decision. But again, that's going to have a huge impact on the island, not just Douglas.
And just moving to the council itself, another casualty, perhaps of less concern to people, was the local elections of 2020, although may be wrong there. What's going on with that now? I mean, you're supposed to reduce your numbers as of, I think it's May the 1st, legally obliged to do that. I mean, what's going to happen?
Well, obviously, they have suspended the local authority elections for the time being. We've still had no indication for how long. And I think it would be beneficial. We have written to the DOI to say, you know, what order are you bringing forward? I think it would be beneficial if we sort of knew a timescale when it would be reviewed. And that will help local authorities plan. For example, if it was 6 months' time, that's right at the time that all local authorities are going to be in their budget process. And if you had a large influx of new people who had never ever dealt with those type of budgets, that could prove difficult. But we have very experienced officers. We carry them through. When's it going to likely happen, or when's it going to be reviewed?
Is a year sensible, like the UK? Because that's what they've just gone for a year on their delay to their local elections. Do you think you'd want something like that?
I must admit, when I first heard the UK announce a year, I thought it was over the top. I thought, you know, why have you extended it so long? There could be people who are going to retire in this round, you know, and now you're asking them to stay on another year and not just, you know, create a casual vacancy that we can't fill anyway. But with all this unfolding and some of the difficulties that are going to be coming at the end of this and the way some of the local authorities, particularly larger ones, are going to face severe economic challenges, maybe deferring it for a year is the right thing to do. I say we want some direction from the department. Also, any order that comes out, you are quite correct, we are supposed to reduce from 18 to 12 from the 1st of May. I did joke with my colleague the other day before this all became so serious, we're going to draw straws, the election's not going on, the six will disappear. But that will need to be put in the order that obviously the council stays at 18 until such times as the election takes place. Also, we are supposed to hold the statutory council meeting, I think it was the 9th of May, for the re-election of a mayor for the forthcoming year. We've now suspended all council meetings. The executive committee is dealing directly with matters on the phone and by email. And two chairs, myself and one other chair, will be signing off decisions. And then all members of the council kept up to date. So we are looking to not have meetings. We're lucky in one sense that during the month of April, up until the statutory council on the 9th of May or whatever, we don't have meetings anyway. So we've got that period where we've cancelled several this week, but we did have a period. So we've got 6 or 7 weeks where there was due to be no meetings anyway. Yeah.
Well, with all these procedural...
We do need some direction from the DOI, without a doubt.
Fast Amar, you're listening to Agenda. I'm Ewan Gorn. Now, in the second half of the programme, we're here talking to Aaron Ibanez, who's working on a documentary. He's worked on several other documentaries. You might remember Pride and Pardoning. You're looking at coronavirus. You've been tasked with sort of doing a documentary. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're looking to do?
The idea sort of sprung about the fact that socially now, the fabric of the Isle of Man has been turned on its head. And we're all living incredibly isolated lives. Lots of people will be living behind closed doors, feeling disconnected. And I thought Manx Radio could reach out and sort of say, use us as a platform. You tell us what's going on in your life. What are the issues that you're facing? How has this changed your world?
So they're telling you their stories. How are you representing them? Are you representing them in a normal radio format? What's the end goal here?
The end goal, I envisage this documentary, eventually when this all passes, that we can look back on this period and have this documentary sort of stand as like a curated audio journal of a snapshot in time for the Isle of Man.
So you're asking people to record themselves every day, is it?
Yeah, so like a daily audio diary. And of course, this initially was sort of targeted to those who were behind closed doors in facing mandatory self-isolation.
So the vulnerable and older people or...?
Everyone. I'm hoping this sort of reaches out to all demographics of the Isle of Man who feel compelled to sort of voice their concerns during this sort of historic time in the island's timeline.
So have you had much reaction to what you've asked for so far? Because you put the call out, was it last week, to say if people do want to take part, you're asking them to send the clips over. Have you had much traction so far?
Yeah, I've had a lot of people get in touch and I've sent them a project brief and sort of what it is that I'm after. I've got a bank of people who are daily, who are contributing on the daily now, which is great, but I'm still after more people. Like I say, I want this to be a creation of diary entries of this time, and hopefully it'll be something we can look back on. And I want this story to be told by the people who were in it.
We don't know how long it's going to go on for, so how long's the documentary going to be?
I don't know. The plan initially was to have a two-part documentary that put together these diary entries, but had included the sort of political announcements that we got on the radio as well, and just this sort of self-telling narrative, I suppose. And I really don't want to feature in this. I just want to string this all together for people to tell their own stories.
Okay, and the important information, if anyone hears this and they want to take part in your sort of citizen journalism documentary, for want of a better description, how do they get in touch?
So we've set up a dedicated email address, which I'm behind. And so that's mystory@manxradio.com. Get in touch, let me know your situation, and I will send you the project brief, and you can just feel free to get started whenever.
That was Aaron Ibanez, and that's all from this programme. We'll be back with more from Agenda soon, and you can listen again to this episode online via the Manx Radio website or through Spotify. But for now, Guru Mayu, and goodbye.